Revolutions Weekly, where we dive into the details of our windy periodic revolutions, elections. I'm your host, Alvin, and today we're going to be continuing our series on the 2021 Indian state elections. So if you remember last week, we were talking extensively about West Bengal, and if you haven't heard that episode, I recommend you start with that, because there's some really interesting factoids on that episode, and at the same time, it kind of really contextualizes you in this region that we're going to be talking about within these 2 weeks. So, if last week we were talking about West Bengal, this week we're still going to be staying relatively in the same neighborhood, and we're going to be going to Assam. So, if you're wondering where Assam is, it's basically in northeastern India. So, it's basically this chunk of India that a lot of people tend to forget about, and Assam is essentially the biggest state in that particular chunk. So, you know, you go to West Bengal, and you have Bangladesh, and then, you know, a bit up north, you have a state called Assam. So, that's what we're going to be talking about this week. So this northeastern region of India in general is really interesting in that, you know, like demographically and culturally, it's fairly different from the rest of India in that, you know, where most of India tends to be, you know, like, of course, you know, tends to have like a Sanskritic culture, you know, Indo-Aryan culture, Dravidian culture, that sort of thing. You know, like we have in East India, you know, we have like a whole bunch of other sorts of like, you know, people types, ethnicities, races even. So, you know, and the people look different, the food looks different, the culture looks different. In some cases even, they're a lot closer to Southeast Asians than the rest of India. So, you know, you might think, well, yeah, you know, of course the politics would also look different, correct? And, you know, you would be somewhat correct. But what you're kind of seeing in the last few years, and especially, you know, within the last decade, is that, you know, like, northeastern politics has kind of, like, started to reflect many of the traits of, you know, like, politics that you would find in northern India. In that, you know, like, well, in this case, I'm referring specifically to, you know, like, a gradual BJP, you know, incursion into these regions. And, like, really successful in many of these states. And Assam is actually one of them. So, for this upcoming election, what exactly is different? Well, I mean, compared to, you know, many of the other elections that we will be talking about and we have talked about, you know, this election is pretty relatively mute in that, you know, what you're likely to see in this particular case is a classic Congress versus BJP battle. Now, Congress, of course, being Indian National Congress. So, you know, like, historically, you know, like, in many states, you know, Congress has, you know, always had this grip of power. And it's actually as recently as 2016, aka the last election, that the BJP was actually able to finally take power in Assam. So, you know, and this is the first time that they've actually held power. So, you know, that's why it's kind of interesting to see, you know, what's going to happen in the next election. So, you know, is the BJP going to, like, hold on to power in the state? Or, you know, or is Congress finally going to, like, take power back? Or, you know, or are we actually even going to see some new regional players, some new regional parties, you know, start to, like, to dominate Assamese politics? Or, you know, we might even see some older established, you know, like, regional parties start to play a bigger role. Well, I mean, it's all these things. So, you know, so what we have here is essentially, you know, like I said, the big highlight, the big headline is essentially Congress versus BJP. But within these coalitions, you have, like, a lot of, like, nuances, and you have a lot of, like, different factors which might play into whether or not the BJP retains the state, or whether or not Congress actually takes the state for them. So, let me just break down the actual coalition in this particular election. So, on the one side, of course, you know, we have the BJP with their NDA, National Democratic Alliance. BJP, of course, you know, being, like I said in the previous episode, you know, like a Hindutva party, you know, a party that's relatively, you know, right-wing, like at least culturally and religiously. So, you know, I said in a previous episode that, you know, the BJP tends to, you know, have, like, massive successes in the Hindi heartland, but not so much in other regions. Now, it's interesting to see here that in the Northeast, the BJP has actually started to garner much success, and we'll get to why in a bit. And then next, we have the AGP, which is the Assam Gana Parishad, essentially a regional party in the state of Assam. So this party was basically formed in the wake of, you know, like, there was a movement in the late 80s against Bangladeshi migrants coming to the state. You know, like, it's kind of started off in the 1970s when, you know, Bangladesh was, like, fighting a war of independence against Pakistan. And, you know, that was basically the start of, like, this wave of Bangladeshi migration going into West Bengal as well as northeastern India. Now, in West Bengal, the attitude, you know, tends to be a bit more cordial, but in northeastern India, you know, like, in a nutshell, basically, they've been less welcoming to these migrants, you know, of course, because of the different ethnicities and things like that. We'll get to that in a bit. And lastly, we have the UPPL, the United People's Party Liberal. So, you know, this is actually a relatively new party that was formed, and it was actually formed to represent the borderland people in northern Assam. And we'll get to why they're pretty significant in a bit. So, and then in the next side, we have the Congress UPA, United Progressive Alliance. Now, of course, like I said earlier, you know, Congress historically had held power for 15 years in the state and was just recently overthrown by the BJP in 2016. Then we have the AIUDF, the All India United Democratic Front, which is essentially a body to represent basically Muslims in the state of Assam, but more specifically, you know, the Muslims of the Miya community, who are essentially Bengali Muslims, you know, some of whom have lived there for generations, but also some of whom came from Bangladesh. So in like the wider picture, you know, it's like Congress has always had this image of, you know, being like minority appeasers, quote unquote. Essentially, you know, it's like in their quest to appease minorities, Muslims specifically, you know, like they've, the BJP narrative is they've basically ignored the will of Hindus. So, you know, like the Congress allying with AIUDF in this case, you know, like a party representing Bengali Muslims, you know, it's like that's basically like one of the many smears that this, that the UPA alliance has in this upcoming election. And then we have the BPF, the Borderland People's Front, which is again another party to represent the borderland people in northern Assam. And if you're wondering so far, you know, like what ethnicity is the majority for the people of Assam? Well, they're Assamese, basically. You know, like whether or not they're distinct from Bengalis is another question. But I think it's like in terms of how they view themselves, yes, they are definitely a distinct people. So the people of Bodoland are like another ethnic group within the state, which forms, you know, like a significant minority essentially up in the northern region. So essentially what it was that the Bodoland was the Bodoland People's Front, the BPF was the original sole party representing the Bodoland people. But you know, recently we have the UPPL, you know, like splitting from the BPF and, you know, aligning themselves with the BJP. So, you know, that'll be interesting to see. And then lastly, you know, we have other smaller players with one or two seats, you know, which are unlikely to, you know, change many of the dynamics that we're going to see, you know, like the communists. Then we have the RJD, which is like a party from Bihar. Then we have the AGM and so on and so on. Now, I've told you so far, you know, it's likely you're just going to be a big Congress versus BJP battle, as it is in like many parts of India. But we do have a third coalition to talk about, and it's pretty interesting how they came to be, and you know, whether or not they might be influential in this particular election is something I honestly don't know, and it's something that will be really fun to watch. So the last coalition is the United Regional Front, the URF. So this small coalition, relatively smaller coalition, relative and really new coalition, formed out of two parties, the Assam Jatiya Parishad, the AJP, and the Rajya Dal, the RD. So these two parties were actually formed just last year. They were basically formed in the wake of the anti-CAA protest. So if there's something that I'm seeing in Assamese politics is that student unions and just students, college students in general, tend to play a much larger role in this state than in other states. Why in particular? I might probably have to guess that, you know, it's just like tradition that kind of like sprung up over time, you know, like spurred initially by like, you know, like anti-Bangladeshi sentiments and you know, just kind of like things like that. And that particular sentiment is actually a reason why the BJP is actually garnering appeal in the state. We'll get to why in a bit. But anyways, so we have these two parties, you know, which are formed from, well, one, the AJP is formed from, you know, student unions, but the RD is actually formed from, you know, peasant unions. So it's like 70 peasant groups essentially came together and formed the RD, and several student unions came together to form the AJP. And, you know, like, and these two were actually mobilized during the, like I said, the anti-CAA protest. So, you know, with all the infrastructure there, with all the leaders, And even, I think the leader of the OED is actually in prison right now. So, you know, there's that aspect of it as well. So, you know, basically, so we have these infrastructure that we set up. So I'm pretty sure these people thought, you know, hey, you know, why don't we just actually, you know, set up a political party, or two political parties in this case. And, you know, that's their alliance, essentially. And the reason I question their relevance for this upcoming election is because the CAA was basically the reason for their prominence. And those supporting these parties tend to largely be those also having passionate opinions about the CAA. So, you know, with COVID taking precedence over the CAA protest, over the CAA issue, you know, like, their relevance in the upcoming election is questioned, in that, you know, if people don't really care about the CAA, well, then they wouldn't really care to vote for the URF, essentially. I mean, it just makes sense. Which is why I think one of their campaign strategies is to actually gin up anti-CAA sentiment in order to, you know, to get people to care about it again, and as such to vote for them in the process. And before we move on, I'd like to kind of like backtrack a little bit. So I mentioned earlier, you know, the AGP, which is essentially, you know, like this Assamese state party, you know, formed in the 80s from like anti-Bangladeshi migrant protest. And their trajectory essentially kind of tells you what the political evolution of the state has been in recent years. You know, so like in the 80s and the 90s, the AGP basically were dominant. They were basically forming the government of the state. But since 2001, they've basically lost relevance in that, you know, because the Congress took power in the state. And since then, they've kind of just like been like small players. And with the BJP taking the state, you know, and they've going on alliance with the BJP, it kind of shows that, you know, they've kind of declined over time. And, you know, just kind of like paints a picture, kind of tells you as well, like, how state parties in general are actually declining in some states. You know, in this case, of course, like the AGP. And, you know, if we ever get a chance, I also would like to talk about the decline of state parties as well, you know, in a big in state like UP, like Uttar Pradesh, where, you know, state parties were once like prominent players, but were now just completely gone, essentially. But anyways, so now that we have that out of the way, what are, like, you know, like the sort of issues that, you know, people are talking about? Well, I think there's probably like three things which might swing this election. So one, of course, you know, is, you know, COVID, obviously. And I think it's like, it kind of speaks to as well, you know, it's like at the end of the day, as good as you are on culture, as good as you are on religion, if you don't provide for people economically, they will vote you out of power. That's just the fact. So COVID will certainly be a big factor in this particular election. And in terms of like the handling in the northeastern state, I'm honestly not as familiar, but, you know, but I mean, in general, there's just been like a whole economic downturn in the whole country. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that affects the election. And the next thing is something we touched on earlier, which is like the anti-CAA vote. So where in West Bengal, you know, by the efforts of the Trinamool Congress, and just with just how the state is, and just the fact that the state has a Bengali majority, you know, anti-CAA sentiment is kind of like unanimous in that, you know, people tend to be against the CAA because, you know, that means, yeah, because I mean, like, because in that sense, they have like room, wiggle room to be secular, to actually evoke secular feelings. And at the same time, you know, the Trinamool Congress has also like made this an essential part of their messaging, in that, you know, in the BJP being anti-India, being pro-India means being against the CAA, and hence that messaging resonates in West Bengal. Now, in the northeastern states, things aren't as black and white. So I kind of also touched on this as well, in that, you know, it's like, unlike in West Bengal, in Assam particularly, you know, like the attitude towards Bangladeshi migrants and just Bengalis in general is actually really polarizing, in that there are segments of the population who don't mind them being there, who like kind of like see them as, you know, a part of the land, who kind of like, you know, just like see them, who kind of just like goes back to this idea of like Indian secularism and just kind of like doesn't see them as a threat. But there are also many, and a surprising amount, and this is why, you know, like the politics of the state is driven primarily really by this, especially in recent years, is that there are actually many people who don't really welcome Bengali migrants, you know, either from West Bengal and especially from Bangladesh. So, you know, because like the reason they give is because, you know, it kind of degrades the culture of the region. Because of course, you know, like even though Assamese, for example, the language is closely related to Bengali, and it goes back to the thing I just said earlier, that the Assamese people see themselves as distinct from Bengalis, and you know, rightfully so. You know, they have many of their own distinct customs and history and things like that. So basically, you know, it's like with this negative attitude, you know, towards Bengali people, essentially is driven by this feeling that, you know, that if we allow massive influxes of Bangladeshi migrants to come to the state, well, then, you know, our culture will be diluted, and as such, you know, we would cease to exist. So, you know, many of the student movements against Bangladeshi migrants have been pushed by the sentiment. Now, if like all these things I've been saying so far kind of like reminds you of a certain party or a certain law, well, then you might be right. I mean, who else would, you know, be poised to capture this like anti-migrant and ergo anti-Muslim sentiment rather than, well, the BJP? So what you're kind of seeing in recent years is that pro-CAA, as in, you know, they want to curb, you know, like Bengali migration into Assam. They want to curb Bangladeshi Muslim migration into Assam. Well, then they'll vote for BJP to show their support for the government and the current government, which, you know, which is, well, BJP-led, and as such, you know, they're a lot more restrictive in these sorts of things. And, of course, you know, the anti-CAA people would vote for Congress or the URF. So, you know, so I guess, like, in a sense, you know, who wins this particular election, or, you know, how many, or the sort of proportions that this election will garner, essentially will tell us more or less, you know, how much of Assam it actually, you know, like what is their feeling about Bengali migrants, essentially. And it kind of like, you know, like, if, you know, the BJP wins, then, you know, some people might say, oh, you know, it's like, it's kind of like a negative precedent in that it shows that, you know, people are less welcoming in this region of India than in others, you know, especially for like migrants and refugees. But, you know, of course, at the end of the day, it's a lot more nuanced than that. And, you know, it could be some of the other issues which are pushing them to vote for BJP. It's not necessarily, or Congress. It's not necessarily that they're, you know, quote unquote racist or anything like that. So we have to be careful to not make that, you know, judgment immediately. And lastly, and, you know, this is what I was getting to earlier, is like this borderland region up in northern Assam. So this region essentially has 13 seats. And as of right now, and as of, well, you know, it's been like a couple of years, but essentially they've had, you know, autonomous rule. So, you know, they can have purview over their own affairs. You know, they can like, they can have extensive control separate from the bigger state of Assam. And essentially, you know, these regions, you know, have their own elections, they have their own political dynamics, but in, you know, in like the state itself, they're typically represented by, well, yeah, like I said, by like these two parties, the UPPL and the BPF. So previously, interestingly enough, the BPF actually allied with the BJP, but there was an election in 2018 in this autonomous region to like choose a council. And it was in this election that the BPF, you know, felt kind of offended because the BJP instead allied with the UPPL, which is, you know, their enemy, essentially, because, like, you know, there's a duopoly, essentially, in this region, and the BJP allying with their enemy, you know, like, the leaders felt offended, and because of that, they decided to pursue an alliance with Congress. So it'll be interesting to see because, you know, I mean, of course, historically, the BPF, you know, still holds massive sway in the region. But what the BJP is counting on, essentially, in this upcoming election is that all of this BPF seats will essentially go to the UPPL. And what, of course, what Congress is counting on is that the BPF will both hold onto the seats that they have and gain some of the UPPL seats. So there's going to be 13 seats in total. Now, why is 13 seats so significant in a parliament of over 100, you know, MPs? Well, because as the polls are showing currently, you know, and we're getting to the polls now, we're getting to the actual results. So as the polls currently show, The BJP is likely to retain power, but on a slim majority. So we're talking about a 57-67 split. Now, I don't think, you know, you don't have to be so good at math, but you can immediately see how 13 seats would make all the difference. So, you know, of course, you know, this is like certainly like one of those issues which, you know, doesn't really evoke, which doesn't really reflect much of the state. But, you know, in a winner-take-all system that, you know, India follows, this is one of those things that, you know, will actually determine who will actually win the election. You know, this like this one region, this one community. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. So basically, those are essentially the dynamics of, you know, like the upcoming race in Assam. And, you know, of course, you know, we're going to be covering the results when they actually come out on May 2nd. So now that we've done two of the East Indian elections, next week we're going to South India. And I like to start that part of the series with Tamil Nadu, primarily because the dynamics that I see in the state are actually, you know, some of the most interesting I've ever seen. So, you know, I like to get to that as soon as possible. And, you know, just Tamil Nadu is like one of like my personal favorite Indian states, just because, you know, if it's like interesting culture, history, and, you know, they make really good films. Would totally recommend. So, guess I'll see you next week for that.